Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Yeah, those techniques are all over the map. They apply to streamers, dry flies, nymphs, all sorts of stuff. Well, since you asked, there are a couple that really just get disregarded. And because everybody goes, oh, I know. The biggest one to me, and I see it when I'm teaching fly tying classes, is you have to be able to see what you're tying. And I mean, really see it. Okay. And people say, I can't see it.
That was Tim Flagler talking about his 182 1-minute tying tutorials. How to make cleaner flies, 10 Flagler bonus tips, and video production quality today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. Check out our Ask a Pro segment, where you can ask a question and get feedback on an upcoming episode. Head over to wetflyswing.com/askapro to submit your question right now. And if you have a tying question for Tim, you can do that right now. Just head over. It only takes a couple minutes. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsors. Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior products at an affordable price. An amazing resource for fly tying materials, tools, and fishing accessories. Since 2005, Togan's has been over-delivering on price, service, and passion. And now it's time to discover the Togan's buzz for yourself. Head over to wetflyswing.com/togans to get started today. That's wetflyswing.com/togens, T-O-G-E-N-S. Togens, Angler's Coffee, roast a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. With a blend for every taste, a dry dropper on-the-go teabag option, and a roast sampler, you know Joe at Angler's has you covered. Head over to wetflyswing.com/anglers to support a sustainable company with unsurpassed taste right now. That's wetflyswing.com/anglers, A-N-G-L-E-R-S, to get going right now. Tim Flagler, one of the most unique and cleanest fly tying channels on YouTube, is here today. Tim talks about how it came to be by accident, where he is focusing his time currently, and some insight on how he produces his episode and how he put this all together. So this is really had a fun one here with Tim. Looking forward to sharing this. It really doesn't get any bigger or better than this one. So without further ado, here is Tim Flagler from Tight Lines Productions.
How's it going, Tim?
Good, Dave. Happy to be here on Wet Fly Swing.
Thanks for making the time this morning. When I think of all the stuff, all the YouTube channels and YouTubers out there in the fly tying space, your channel is for sure probably the most unique if you look at just the angle of how you do your videos, right? But also the production quality is awesome. So we're going to dig into all that, everything you have going on the fly tying end. But start us off. Take us all the way back to how fly fishing, how you first got into this thing and how you got into fly tying.
Sure. Fly fishing started when I was in college. I was upstate New York at a small college, St. Lawrence University. And situated right up near the St. Lawrence Seaway above the Adirondacks, and started fishing, just, you know, spin fishing for trout freshman year with a bunch of guys I'd met. And with the help of a couple of professors there, they got us sort of as a group into fly fishing. And boy, I mean, it was kind of off to the races for me from there. And I think a lot of it was more geographic location, had the Salmon River, you know, and the Ontario Tribs, hour and 20 minutes to the south and west, the Adirondacks and, you know, all the small streams and rivers that flow north out of the Adirondacks, just right wow. there. And then virtually all of Canada with an easy reach to the north. So, it's kind of like fly fisherman's paradise up there, and very rural, not a lot of fishing pressure anywhere. And again, I some of the professors that I had who were also fly fishermen just, really helped out, got me onto water that, was private land and things like that. And, just close the fences when you leave. And right. It was wonderful. If my parents had any idea, they never would have let me go to school there.
Nice. So you've got, so you get into it, you're loving it. It sounds like it becomes a big passion. When does all the production, the kind of the tight lines and the YouTubing and all that stuff come to be?
That was much, much later, Dave. So what happened is I graduated from college, came back to New Jersey, where I spent most of my life, and realized that New Jersey had some great fly fishing here. But I was in a town called Summit, in closer to Manhattan, closer to New York, and worked there for a few years, but was racing west, about an hour almost every night after work to come out to western New Jersey to fish. And so did that, but was working for an educational publisher at the time, and worked for them for almost 14 years. And that's where the video production came from. I was producing video with them. And so, video really became my trade, and the company ended up moving to Atlanta. I wanted to stay here, and for a variety of other reasons. And my wife, Joan, and I ended up starting Tightline Productions in 1998. And so we've done all sorts of video production all over the map. But the fly tying, I wish I could tell you it was some grand business plan and that YouTube was, something that I saw coming. But honestly, it was totally by accident. We were doing, for a candle company of all things, we were doing some macro work for them on the wicks burning. And I needed a kind of a stand-in for a candle and was just kind of looking around my studio, and there was a fly tying vise with a fly in it that just happened to be the exact same height as the candle wick. And so put that in and did the focus and lens work with that, and kind of went, wow, man, I can get real, real close to the fly. And that's honestly that's how it started. And a friend of mine asked me, this is the wild part, a friend of mine who I'd fished with, we were fishing this weird little pattern, the Y2K. It's kind of like a glow bug, and it's the simplest pattern in the world. But he was like, you know, you're a video producer, do a video of how to tie it. And so I did this little stupid video, and it's like, this is going way back, and I didn't know anything about YouTube. You couldn't Dropbox it. It was just too big. And so I ended up putting it up on YouTube. I didn't have a clue as to what would happen. And I looked at it, I put it up the next morning, and there are like 10 views on the thing. And I called the guy up and I said, how many times do you have to watch that video to figure it out? And he goes, I haven't even watched it yet. And I'm like, what? Well, I don't get it. And so went back and looked again, and there are like 50 views on the thing. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of interesting. And that's basically how we got started.
And that's how you did it.
Yeah, totally random, totally by accident, the things that came together. And I've always enjoyed fly tying. I think since day one. And like many people, it's kind of come and gone over the years for me. I've been kind of sidetracked by other things, but it really has been just kind of a constant, always there, tying at least once or twice a week, and oftentimes a lot more than that. But and so, yeah, just sort of fit. And we had the video gear. We've up some of the video gear specifically for the macro work, which is why I believe our video looks, you know, I produce it as a video editor, not really as a fly tire, which is a different animal altogether. And, you know, there's some great video fly tires out there, but there are not many that have a true video background in production. So,
no, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what makes it unique for sure. When you, I mean, just, you know, literally, I mean, the audio too on it is very unique. I mean, it sounds, I'm not sure, maybe if we have time, we'll dig into some of that. And, you know, your channel, I think you're getting close to reaching 100,000 subscribers, right?
Yeah.
Has that been when you think back, I'm sure you never thought of 100,000 people, but I mean, like, what does that feel like now that has that been a goal for you?
It is now, because some other guys have gotten, Davey McPhail, he got to 100,000. And, my buddy Colin McEwen up at the New Fly Fisher in Canada, he recently made 100,000, and we're like so close. So I would urge anybody, please.
Yeah, we'll get you over the hump. This podcast is going to put you there, Tim.
Yeah, it like 98.5 and growing at 500. It looks like about 500 new subscribers every month. I was really hoping to hit the 100,000 by the new year, but
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it really is. But one of the things that just blows me away, Dave, is not the subscribers necessarily, but when you go in and in the YouTube or Google Analytics, you can see how many hours people have spent watching the videos. And I just kind of, I look at it every month and I go, you know, if people weren't watching this, productivity around the globe would probably increase, you know.
What are we talking about? When you look at time, is it like million or what is the number?
Yeah, overall it is millions of hours and of hours. And so I kind of feel bad in a way, but you know, particularly people that are watching when they're at the office and they're supposed to be doing other work Hey, all good though.
You don't do the subtitles, right, on your videos, or do you do those?
No, and I think most people can
figure it out.
Yeah, because of the way we shoot it, they can figure it out. It's you know, the narration helps, but it's not absolutely critical.
Gotcha. I know that the narration is killer. And yeah, everything's good. And I'm sure most of the people listening, you know of you or probably watched your videos. I'm curious. So take us back to 98. And I don't remember, because 98 was before my time as far as the online production stuff. I mean, you're way ahead, which is cool. Who else was out there on YouTube? Were there any other players that are out there now still that were going then? Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, well, going back, the first tying video I did was later than that. We started the business in 1998. And so probably the first time I put anything on YouTube, and I should know this, is probably about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, 2011, I think. And gotcha. There were a few, and many of them have dropped off. Interestingly, they're no longer producing, and some guys, it's been a while now, but we were in this weird transition at the time too, between, kind of the end of DVDs being really, you know, really hot and great for conveying information. And so we produced a couple of DVD series on like fly casting and things like that. I did one with, a guy down in Pennsylvania named Eric Straub and Charlie Mack, who's unfortunately no longer with us. But you know, that was right at that kind of changeover between what you could do online and DVDs. And so, yeah, there were some other guys producing, but I'm blanking on names.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I can imagine some of them that were out there probably. We could probably just go back and take a look at some of the big channels and fly tying and imagine they were there at the start. On your camera, so this is really interesting because you have this front view and a lot of the other, I'm not sure, I don't think many other people, even some of the bigger fly tying channels, I'm trying to think, does David McPhail, I'm not even sure if he does the front.
No, he does not do it from the tire. I do it from the tires perspective, view. Yeah. And his camera is in front as it is for most people. And the problem is even with a smaller, you know, 4K camera. It's a lot of gear between you and the fly, and it takes some getting used to. And I've had other tires come in and tie and just cannot get used to having the camera there. And a lot of this has to do, because it's so critical with macro, the distance you are away from the fly with, say, the front of the camera lens, you need to have a workable distance. So when you're, say, wrapping a dubbing noodle around the fly, you know, and you have 4 or 5 inches of tying thread, you don't want to be hitting the camera lens. How far you as a person needs to be away from the fly to correctly focus, whether you're using magnification or not. It's almost impossible for me anyway to look through the camera LCD screen and tie the fly because you lose your depth perception doing that. And so that, that having the camera between me and the fly is a really, really, it took a lot to get that system so it's workable for me. And I don't want to go into too much detail on that gear if we could.
Yeah. We don't have to do that for sure. No, I think, it's more interesting, more for me, what you're tying and what you're producing and the nerdy, YouTube video production stuff isn't critical here, but it is interesting because you're the only one doing it for the most part. And it is a lot of work. Have you done that since the beginning? Have you always done it that way?
Yeah, it was back when I was actually doing that video series for Charlie Mack and Eric Straub. I had a really large, you know, think big shoulder, like Beta SP camera at the time, and with no way to put it between the tire and the fly, and so shot over the shoulder, and that was okay, but I always knew I really wanted to get the tire's perspective. It just kind of critical for me. And that was one of the things that said early on, if I'm going to do it and be serious about it, I want it to be from the tire's perspective. I also, the thing that I noticed is many people, when they're doing these videos, they just leave the camera on the fly. You never see materials prep.
Right.
Yeah. And materials prep it's such an important part. I mean, it's easily 50% of the time. And I've just felt that it was so critical that you be able to show that. And so, and again, this is where, you know, little video experience comes in real handy in having the video gear available. I can have multiple cameras and you know, understand editing better than most, and that, you know, that's how that comes about.
That's right. That's kind of is that like the B-roll or?
Yeah. Yep. And you know, sometimes it depends on what I'm doing. I'll do it right along, you know, I'll prep the materials, then move the camera back to the fly, tie in those materials, then move the camera back to the materials. Other times I'll have a second camera or even a third camera. It really just depends on the pattern and how much is involved in the materials prep.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's been cool because I've obviously, like a lot of people, watched lots of your videos, and I, you know, I tend to link out to whenever I'm searching for, like, I have some guest on and they'll mention a pattern, you know, I'll search up that pattern and you're usually up there on top of the list. I mean, does it, have you had to do much work as far as, I mean, imagine you've been there since now 10 years, getting the word out there. Has this been just like organic growth for you over the years?
It has been organic growth. We are doing a few things now. I mean, our relationship with Orvis, you know, it's a fairly casual relationship, honestly, but has helped a lot. And just I do a tips and techniques video every Monday with them. And so that's gotten the word out. We're working with the new fly fisher and the Jensens, Dave and Amelia Jensen, kind of as a collaborative, trading links back and forth, which is a really unique thing and kind of a new thing for us, but it seems to be working very well. Plus, we have really very long-term relationships with both Orvis and Midcurrent. So when I have a new video, like I had one that just went up last night, and both of them will put that video up today. I think Orvis has already put the video for this week up, and Midcurrent runs it in their newsletter. And so they've been just great. I had a huge reach between those two as well. You know, that in turn leads to you end up getting higher up in the Google searches. And, you know, that's what really warms my heart when I go in and just into a Google or a YouTube search field and key in Woolly Bugger and my video comes up first. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, it's the one.
Yeah.
That's right. I think it's Woolly Bugger is your number one fly tying tutorial. Yeah. I'm curious, you mentioned fly casting, and I know you do some other stuff. Maybe just kind of talk about a newbie. Somebody maybe hasn't watched your whole channel or watched all the videos. Can you describe it? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, obviously the fly tying's there, but you do a lot of different things, reviews and things like that. How would you describe it?
It's mainly fly tying for the channel. But I also do, you know, fly tying tips. Those are done kind of in conjunction with Orvis, but they're on my YouTube channel. I will do not really product reviews, but if I have a piece of gear that really works for me, I'm going to say something about it. I mean, I'm not a gear hound, I guess, but if I have something that works, I want other people to know about it. And it you know, it's really not a salesy, pushy promotional thing. It's more like, guys, this thing works. And so there's some of that. Some of our most popular videos, believe it or not, not fly tying, but knot tying.
That's right. The blood knot.
Yep. The blood knot, I believe in terms of YouTube revenue is our greatest producer over the years. I go back and look at it every now and again and kind of go, wow, I was on top of my game back then. It really is.
Oh, Roy, so that's still a good video?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's the wonderful thing about YouTube and is that on YouTube, it's kind of, for now anyway, it's up there for life. Whereas, you know, something that goes up on Instagram or Facebook is kind of fleeting. And so this is both good and bad. I have videos that I put up years ago that I can't stand. I look at and I cringe, but I don't want to take them down.
That's right. Well, Tim, not to call you out, but I'm curious. So what are we, if we want to look up, what do you got there? Are these tying videos just the...
I tell you what, the one that I really hate, and it's going to come up again and again, is my Muddler Minnow that's on there. I don't like the way it came out at all. It's, in next month's tie-off with Rosenbauer, we're both going to tie traditional Muddler Minnows. And so, if I started practicing right now, Dave, I might be able to do something that's acceptable. I can't stand that fly.
Yeah, the Muddler. Is that just the deer hair trimming and stuff like that? Or
the deer hair trimming is one thing, getting the collar right, getting the head right, but it's the mottled turkey tail and wing, you know, when it's tied traditionally, that, it can go sideways so quick. And then Rosenbauer's insisting on a traditional tinsel body, you know, no mylar. Yep.
That's tough.
Yeah, which ups the game even more. And so I know there's some guys out there that tie great muddlers. I'm not one of them.
That was a question I was kind of thinking about for you because your videos, you know, look so clean and good. But, I mean, tying is not easy. You know, you mentioned Davey McVale. I mean, he is, right, those dry flies. I mean, I'm terrible at the Catskill style dry flies. And I always love watching people because it's so beautiful. When you think of yourself, I mean, do you have, like, a superpower as far as fly tying? Do you feel like you have a type of fly you either are better at or enjoy doing? And is there one that you're not as good at?
No, not really. And here's the weird thing, Dave. What has always interested me in fly tying are not the patterns. It's the techniques that you use to make the patterns. And so I don't get real fixated on like one specific genre and absolutely killing it. And I don't want to take anything away from people that do that. You know, somebody who really goes after traditional wet flies, you know,
Davey or like Davey Watton or somebody like that, right? Somebody who spends their
Or Don Bastian was amazing with the things. Yeah. And that's super cool. Or the guys that really are after the traditional Catskill style dries. They're just spectacular. They're some of the most elegant flies on the planet. But to me, I'm more after the techniques, and particularly techniques that allow, say, an advanced beginner tire to get to that next level, to get into intermediate and advanced intermediate tying. And they're little things, you know, like cording and uncording your thread throughout the tying process that allows you to do different things. It's, you know, ways of wrapping peacock curl so it stays nice and fluffy, say, on a prince body. Just those little techniques are what really keep me going. And that's why I find myself always searching for are the techniques, not really patterns specifically or groups of patterns.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Dedi Flies, established in 1928, is the oldest family-run fly shop in the world. And you know I'm all about the history and fly fishing, which is one reason I'm super stoked to have Dedi on as a sponsor this year. Long before I made my first order with Dedi, I remember hearing stories about the quality and the history and always wanting to connect deeper with them. So that time has come now, and I share the Dedi tradition with you. Located in Livingston Manor on the banks of Willowemoc Creek, Dedi is your welcoming place on the creek or online. Their retail and online shop have a large selection of flies, materials, fly gear, outdoor lifestyle items, books, and more. Dedi Flies inventory consists solely of products that meet every angler's demand for highest quality and service. Of course, they offer fly fishing and casting lessons as well as guided trips. For more information, visit Dedi Flies at wetflyswing.com/Dedi or give them a call, 845-439-1166. That's wetflyswing.com/Dedi, D-E-T-T-E. You support this podcast by clicking over through that link to Dedi. Okay, let's get back to the show.
And it's an awesome reminder for everybody because, yeah, I think sometimes we get stuck in, you know, like the pattern, even fishing, right? I got to have this pattern, which is not true, obviously. But yeah, I love the technique. So maybe we could talk a little more about it. You already, just the two you mentioned there, you know, uncording and wrapping. If somebody, where would you direct somebody or what would you tell somebody if they want to get to that next level as far as tips? Would you just send them over to like the Orvis and watch your videos? Or what would you tell them if they wanted to get like a bunch of these techniques that you're talking about, upper level stuff, what would you tell them?
Specifically for would be I think I just finished my 182nd Orvis 1 minute tips and techniques, and you know they're available throughout my YouTube channel, but also through the Orvis Learning Center, and they're just at 1 minute long, there's just as concise as I can make them. They're not hyper detailed, but it will really get you into those tips and techniques without having to weed through a whole fly. And so, yeah. And in doing it, I think I have probably four or five different ways to make a parachute fly. And I'm not going to tell you which way is the best. It all depends on, a lot of it depends on the quality of the materials you have, what materials you're using, plus your fly tying ability. And also, quite frankly, some physical ability, whether your fingers are, you know, really large or whether you have small, nimble fingers, it makes a difference. And one technique that's going to work for one person isn't going to work for another. And then there's the thing is, as you become more advanced, a technique that you would use, maybe a different technique that you're better at tying, you're more dexterous, is going to work better for you. And, you know, the end result is going to look better. So I like giving people options as opposed to saying, this is the way you tie a parachute fly.
Love that. And I was just doing the math in my head, you know, pretty simple stuff. But yeah, I mean, 182 minutes, essentially, 182 videos. I mean, you're talking 3 hours. So somebody could bust over there right now and watch your channel for 3 hours and get all those tips,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, go Clockwork Orange on it, you know, put the toothpicks in their eyes and keep them open and just make them stare at it and see where you land after that. You'd probably be absolutely nutty. Yeah, there's a lot in that 3 hours.
I'm just curious, and I mean, I know you won't remember all of the stuff, but what are some tips that come to mind out of those 182? You know, you mentioned a couple. Anything else that would be good to check if they only had, you know, maybe a chance to take a look at 10 other videos? Is it a mix of dry, and is it a mix of dry, wet, like kind of everything?
Yeah, those techniques are all over the map. They apply to streamers, dry flies, nymphs, all sorts of stuff. Well, since you asked, there are a couple that really just get disregarded. And because everybody goes, oh, I know. The biggest one to me, and I see it when I'm teaching fly tying classes, is you have to be able to see what you're tying. And I mean really see it, okay? And people say, I can't see it. Well, with almost every, I mean, my eyes are terrible, okay? I'm very nearsighted, and I wear contact lenses so I can see far distances. But in turn, that kills my close-up vision. So I'm using magnifiers, 3.5s, when I'm doing a lot of my tying, and lots of light. And those two things together will change the quality of how you tie flies. And I guarantee anybody who's out there that if they get the magnification and their distance from the fly correct and have enough light on it, your tying will get better. It's so, so critical. And I realized that this was going back years before the tying videos. I've been tying for quite a while. I think I was like 40, 42 years old and fishing with a friend. And he said, you know, let me see what you got in the fly box. And he's like looking through my fly box, and he was being really nice about it. He goes, Tim, you used to be a better tire than this. And he goes, I hope you don't take offense to it. And I'm like, geez, man, that just kicked me in the junk. Because wow. But anyway, what I did was went back and I'm like, what's wrong with these flies? And put them under magnifying glass. And my eyes had changed. And I honestly didn't even realize that I wasn't tying as well as I could. And that was really a big, pardon the pun, but an eye-opener for me. And it makes such a difference. And in like tying classes, people will go, oh, I can't see it. And it's like, I'm looking at the guy, you know, he's mid-70s and not wearing magnification. And I go, you know, I don't care how good your eyes are, magnification is going to help.
What is the, by magnification, and we're just talking glasses, or is it better, are putting those things like the lenses above your fly, you know, those are those good as well?
That's a great question, Dave. For me anyway, and I've tried and used both, the big magnifying lens, which obviously really doesn't work with me with the camera. That's kind of a deal killer there. But for me, having the glasses on is much, much better because I can move my head around to examine different parts of the fly and keep everything in focus. Whereas when you have that big lens, it's not nearly as movable and you don't get to see the details in the fly as well. And, you know, checking both sides, checking the view from the front, from the back. And so definitely the glasses. And what I advocate, if you have, even if you don't have any doubts about your close-up vision, is go to the dollar store, okay? Grab one of those little plastic baskets that they have, walk over to the eyeglass, the magnifier display, and just pluck one. Start at 1.0, grab a pair of them. They're a buck a piece. Go all the way down and go to the highest magnification you can get. Bring them home and get yourself a safe working, good working distance from your fly, what's comfortable for you, and then just try on those different pairs, going up the scale and whatever comes into focus, just like at the eye doctor. That's what you go with then. And, you know, if you're fairly young, just be prepared for that to change as you get older.
No, and that resonates with me totally, because I remember it was about three years ago, same thing. I was kind of like getting annoyed with tying flies. I was just like, wow, this isn't really fun. And then I was at the doctor, like, yeah, glasses. And I put on the glasses and came back, and it was like you said, an eye opener.
Yeah.
I'm curious on the light. So on the light, is there a specific type of light that is more helpful, or just get a bright light?
No, very important to have a daylight light. And these used to be, you know, specialty lights. But now everything is like daylight balance, because you don't want to have, incandescents are very, very warm lights. Fluorescents are cool lights. They tend to be blue. You know, incandescents are more yellowy and red than anything, but something that's daylight balanced. And in video, it's 5600K, 5600 Kelvin. It is because that's pretty much what sunlight is. And so you want the fly. Not many people fish indoors that I know of. So, you know, you want your flies to look like they're going to look like the same as they look outside. And, so yeah, daylight balanced. I like something that's fairly diffuse and not real directional. So they're not a lot of super harsh shadows. And if it's real directional, not diffuse, that you top your fly, if the light's above it, can be just bright, 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 but the underneath is in the shadows, basically dark, dark. And so a more diffuse light really works well, for a lot of people. And this has just come about because kind of COVID and people zooming and vlogging and things like that. But a small ring light is really, really nice. And no need to put it between you and the fly, a ring light over top, directly over top, almost like a halo, where it works really, really well. It kind of brings light all around the fly. So it's kind of backlit, it's kind of front lit, and because they're generally more diffuse, it's a very comfortable light to tie with.
There you go. Perfect. These are good. Well, let's keep on this for a little bit. I'm just curious, you know, a couple more, maybe you broke out a good tip there. What would be another couple you'd add to this, maybe that or just pop in your head as far as these little tying, you know, tips or tricks, techniques?
One that I'm constantly doing, I'm fortunate, I get to be featured tire at one of the featured tires at the fly fishing shows, which is really, really, really cool. And it's, you know, I'm tying different patterns, but most of the time it's those patterns I chose because they have a bunch of tips with them. But the one that really kind of surprises me that people don't know and don't use is when you're wrapping materials that have multi-strands. In other words, say the body on a pheasant tail, where you have three or four or five pheasant tail fibers, is, okay, you got them tied in. Let's say you're using the tips as for the tails, okay? And your tying thread is located right back at the start of the bend. Rather than winding your tying thread forward up the body of the fly, then winding those three, four, or five pheasant tail fibers, wrap behind your tying thread. And with each wrap of those fibers, you have to push up on your tying thread the weight of the bobbin. This is much easier to see than it is to describe. So you're wrapping behind your tying thread and pushing it up every time you wrap. And what that does is it keeps those three or four fibers sandwiched together. And you won't have one that wants to race up the hook shank before the others, or one that wants to flip over onto its back and show you just stem. This works especially well with peacock curl. And the other advantage there is, when you wrap it and kind of pull the peacock curl by alongside that tying thread that's hanging down, it actually teases the little flues on the peacock curl out. So I went from tying just horrible looking prince nymph bodies to, just by changing my technique and doing that, to getting the nice big full bodies, even with like three hurls. You don't have to throw a whole ton of hurls at them. And so yeah, that's a big one. If anything that's multi-stranded like that, if you wrap behind your tying thread, it really, really works.
There you go. Now those are the little things that make, you know, when you look at your flies or your videos, those are the things that stand out, because you see that, yeah, on the pheasant tail, it's obvious that, you know, everything looks really clean, yeah. Right? And that's the difference. Yeah, it's clean. That's a good tip. No, this is good. I think there's probably, like you said, there's 182 of these tips, so we could dig. Yeah. I'll put links out to some of those other ones, you know, as well. And I mean, there's so many, you know, places here, Tim, I would love to kind of dig out down into. I'm curious. You know, fly materials is one thing. I have a bunch of materials. I don't buy a heck of a lot these days because I have a ton of materials. Do you still pick up new materials, or are you pretty much, you know, you've got everything you need? Are you still buying materials out there?
I buy materials almost every day, Dave.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It is. In fact, I'm here in my kind of studio tying room looking around, and I'm not sure I can fit any more materials in here. It's there are fly shops that I put to shame. And yeah, there are certain things that you just kind of, you got to have. And because I tie over such a wide range, you know, from saltwater flies to salmon flies, to little teeny midges, you know, to big, you know, full on blue water flies, it's different material. And there's also, you know, new materials coming out, or relatively new materials coming out, and tools as well. And then one of the things that's, I don't know whether you've noticed it, but there are more, to me, smaller materials providers coming out, which I think is just great. Whether it's guys that are, you know, are breeding for hackle, or guys that are making their own custom dubbing blends. And first of all, I like to support them. But secondly, I mean, this stuff is, there's a reason they're doing it. It's specialty material. You can't get it anywhere else. And I love that stuff. Just a slightly different look. And one of the things those new materials can do is you can take like a really old pattern that's say 150 years old. And just by changing out one or two materials and maybe putting it on a sexier looking hook, you know, something, a black nickel barbless hook, for example, you can take that ancient pattern and really modernize it. Not taking away from the way it looked, you know, tied on a classic Mustad hook or anything, but you can change the look and still stay with that same theme, if you will. And I think that's super cool as well. Add some new material in there.
That is cool. Well, I'm just curious on materials, because that is a great point I was going to ask you about. Can you give a shout out to one of those new materials? Because I know obviously a lot of people have different places they can go. You know, Whiting is obviously a big, you know, producer of some really high quality, you know, feathers and necks and things. But what would be a good kind of the smaller companies that you're talking about? Anything come to mind there?
Oh, yeah. How long you got, Dave?
Yeah. Give me just a quick, yeah, give me a little summary of what you got in front of you.
Well, here are a couple things. This is not actually a company. I have a friend who just amazing at producing his like duck skins or Hungarian partridge.
Oh, wow,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And if you find somebody like that, it's huge. Yeah, it's huge. And that's where you get into those kind of boutique materials. Guys like Craig Matthews out of Blue Ribbon Flies, they always it's not like mass market stuff, but in terms of elk hair and bird skins, it's just different. It's more expensive, you know, it's limited quantities, but you just get this just beautiful quality material. And I don't want to take anything away from guys, you know, like Wopsy or Hairline. They're mass producing. They have to produce in volume, and they have great stuff. Very, very usable. It's just, it's not that real high end. One of the guys that I do a lot of stuff with now is, he's out in central Pennsylvania. His name's Evan Brandt, and he owns Sidling Hill Hackle. And I don't want to hurt his feelings. He's just kind of like a local farmer. He's a dairy farmer, but has started raising chickens for hackle. And he has some of Charlie Collins from the Catskills. He has some of Charlie's bloodline. And I've, you know, always liked Charlie's skins and feathers, particularly for Catskill style dries. But Evan's doing some great work out there, and it's just different. It's, you know, it's not as mechanical as say Whiting. You know, you're not getting the huge consistency, or, you know, way, way long feathers and just perfection, but you're getting more natural looking colors, kind of mottled stuff. So love that. The other one, and I just started using some of the material, and I'm absolutely sold on it. And I hope I'm not going to mess up his name. It's John Romer, Arizona Fly Company. I hope that's right. Sorry, John. And he has a dubbing called Simi Seal, which if seal fur, you know, very, very hard, true seal is very hard to get. And The semi-seal stuff is about as close in translucency as you can get to regular seal fur. And he just has this ridiculous wealth of blends of colors, insane. And some short fiber stuff, as well as mega semi-seal, which are longer fibers. So yeah, they're two of them. Yeah, they really, really like.
Cool. So if somebody wanted to dig deeper down, I mean, this is pretty amazing right here, you know, some of these unique is, where would you send somebody if they wanted to learn about some of these other more unique companies? Is that something you just kind of have to do your research, or what would you tell them?
Yeah. And on the tying videos, I don't really come out and go, you got to try this. You got to, you know, but I will, like on the video that just went up, I did a video. It's one of Paul Beal's patterns, Paul Beal from Frankenfly. A great website. And Paul, a while ago, sent me the recipe for this smallmouth fly called the Yellow Meanie. And that uses semi-seal, a mix of semi-seal and Franken dub in it. So you get to see it by watching the tying videos. You'll see the stuff that I'm kind of hyped about. And again, I don't like stuff that's like super, super promotional. But I do like to get, you know, I'll show the packaging or whatever and kind of hint that it's good stuff.
Yeah, that's good. No, I think that's all helpful. And Paul, yeah, I'll put a link out to, we had Paul on the podcast a while back, and it was a good, fun episode. I'm curious, I was thinking about this before, you mentioned your flies and you have all this material. I mean, just like daily, are you tying, I mean, how many flies do you tie in daily or weekly? Or are you just tying a lot, or is it kind of a standard amount?
It goes week to week, and a lot of it has to do with, for me, I also guide and I also do hosted trips. And so to right now, Montana every summer, and Patagonia in the spring, if I can get into Patagonia ever again, and, you know, hopefully expanding that as well. And so, you know, if I'm going on a trip, I'm tying a lot for the trip. And prior to that, the other thing is I'm constantly looking for new flies to tie on video and either practicing them or modifying them. And so, you know, I'm not like a commercial tier in any sense. I do, if I have the time, I'll tie flies for the local fly shop here in town. But other than that, you know, I'm not tying in the volume that a lot of people are. It's more all over the place. I do, one of the tips, tying tips, and everybody hears this, no one does it, is, not just tie a dozen of the same flies in a sitting, but, and this was told to me years ago, by a guy who used to own the local fly shop, and that's tie 15. And when you tie 15, when you're done with that 15th fly, be real disciplined. Go through those 15 and take out three that aren't as good. And it makes you it gets you to be so much more critical with your work. Taking out three, put them in a cup, you know, give them to local Boy Scouts or take them down to the fly shop as, you know, free flies for young people, something like that. They're absolutely fishable. They look fine, but what that taking away those three makes you be hypercritical of what you're tying. And you will become a better tier as a result of doing that.
There you go. That's a nice tip as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the 15. Okay.
Yeah. Take some discipline to do, you know, and obviously some time, but a surefire way to quickly become a better tier is to do that.
Gotcha. How do you decide on, you know, patterns? Like, you know, a new pattern comes up. That's always an interesting one, right? Do you have a constant feed of people giving you, like, you know, we want to hear from, you know, we want to see this? Or how do you choose the next fly for the next week?
It's all over the place. I do have a list of patterns that I want to tie. But then things will come up, like I'll have a trip. I got to go up and go smallmouth fishing with the guys from New Fly Fisher. I got to go up to Algoma Country in Canada this past fall. And so that got me going. You know, I interrupted what I was going to tie and did a whole bunch of smallmouth patterns stuffed in there. So it can change at a whim. If I, you know, if conditions are really good down off the beach here in New Jersey, you might see a saltwater pattern or two pop up just because I need them. And it's like, why, you know, if I haven't tied it before, you know, something for the Albies, throw a pattern in there. And then purely selfish, you know, I'm tying those 15 for myself. And YouTube audience just has to watch along. But
there you go. That's good. And I think the Deceiver is one. I was looking at some of your top viewed videos, and
yeah,
the Deceiver made the top 10 or whatever. And most of them were kind of your, you know, your pheasant tails, hares, ears, the typical stuff you'd think. But definitely you got that Deceiver in there. That the people are loving that.
Yeah. And then I, you know, I go in kind of different spurts. I got, and still am, real into intruder style flies tied on shanks. And you know, with the hook behind, kind of Pacific Northwest style. A lot of that came because I started doing Trout's Bay, which really cool fishing technique for me. And now it's tube flies. I'm kind of really getting into tube flies more and more, and that's a lot of fun. That's some stuff with tube flies that I didn't really see coming. You know, I knew the advantages of them, but now that I've started tying them, some neat stuff.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. The CRC system from Trestle provides secure and convenient storage for your fully rigged fly rods with unsurpassed gear protection. Every CRC system comes with secure mounting clamps, padding in the reel compartment, and their proprietary suspended rod liners. Leave your gear on your vehicle full time or quickly take the CRC system down and telescope it into carry mode in just a few minutes with the fastest and easiest to use mounting system on the market. From the very first time I connected with John, I knew this was going to be a great fit for the podcast. Making it easier and faster to get on the water is a huge part for me, especially in the ever crazy and increasingly busy world. Not only are these rods secure for me and the family, but they are always rigged and ready to go. Equipped with their patented protective no-snag reel-up design, this is not your average rod carrier. Carrying your rods with reels facing up means more protection for your guides, blink, reel seat, and also allows for a better fit if you have a hatchback. Too much good stuff here for me to cover it all, so I'm going to have to send you over to Trestle and check it out for yourself. You can go there right now. Just take a look at wetflyswing.com/trestle, and you can get started right now. That's Trestle, TRXSTLE. That's TRXSTLE. You support this podcast by clicking over through that link to check out what John and the Trestle crew have going right now. Okay, back to the show.
Trying to think, we recently had an episode, we were talking about some tube flies and stuff. Give us a, like, tying a tube fly. If somebody was going to tie that, do you have a tip or a technique or something that pops out there tying tubes?
One of the things is to try to, and just did the second one on kind of tube fly basics on those 1 minute tips and techniques. It's so overwhelming when you first get into it. There are just so many different types of tubes and weights and metal tubes, poly tubes, and, you know, different rigidities of the tubes, and then different ways to different kind of mounts, whether you tie, what kind of thing fits in your tying vise to what kind of mandrel, and just try to stay simple if you can. That's sort of the idea that I'm doing with those 1 minute ones, and really just go for a very common tube and a common hook holder. I wouldn't go crazy on colors or sizes. Just pick something middle of the road, not too small, not too large, and basically tie streamers that you've already tied before. In other words, tie woolly buggers. You're already familiar with the tying sequence on those, you know, tail, body, hackle wound. And then, but just sort of translate that to the tube, and, you know, a Mickey Finn, for example, simple fly like that. And then if you're doing salmon flies, stick with something, you know, a blue charm or an undertaker, and, you know, nothing that's too crazy, and get used to tying it on a tube. One of the things that I found, and nobody ever told me this with tube flying, is because the tubes are a much larger diameter than the shank of a hook, it's much easier to tie in materials. For me anyway, you know, getting, say, jungle cock eyes on side to side and oriented the way you want them, you just kind of have that, it's not really more surface area, but that curve isn't as small. And so things don't seem to want to spin around as much as they do on a regular metal shanked hook.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We're going to wrap this up here pretty quick here, Tim, but I just wanted to fill out this list. We've been kind of knocking off a few tips and things here. It all highlight that 182 is going to be at the top of the show notes, but give us a couple more, maybe two or three more of these little tips, techniques or whatever for fly tying that we could fill out this list. Anything else come to mind? Maybe videos that you had out of that 182?
Okay. One of them, and this is kind of simple. It's a more beginner technique, but I even see advanced tires doing this. When you're whip finishing a fly, first of all, to make that knot truly efficient is whip finish from back to front. Okay, that it puts the most wraps over top of the thread that you're pulling back underneath those wraps. Okay, if you go front to back, it's not anywhere near as secure a knot. Number two with the whip finish. So back to front with the whip finish. Number two is seat that knot really well. Take the thumb of your right hand, the thumbnail of your right hand, kind of hook it against the hook eye, if you will, and then pull on the thread. Work it back and forth with your bobbin hand and really dig it in there. Make sure that knot is seated well, because if it's not seated well, even though there's thread under the wraps, it's just not secure. It's kind of like doing a clinch knot to tie on a fly and not seating the knot, honestly. And so seat the knot just as you would, you know, when you're tying on a fly. The other one is when you're snipping, or I use a little chisel on the back of my bobbin to cut my tying thread, which is also kind of unique, but is put the thread under tension when you go to snip it off. And what happens is just that little bit of tension is going to make using your tying scissors or the chisel in the back of your whip finish tool, it's going to make that thread part much easier. And it's also going to pull that tag end just a little bit underneath those thread wraps, so you don't get that little frayed thing that sticks out. And, you know, when you put head cement or whatever it is on there, you still end up seeing that little frayed piece. Back to front on the whip finish, seat the knot really well, and then thread tension when you go to snip it off.
There you go. Okay. Well, I think that finishes out a pretty decent list there. I'm curious, okay, you know, we mentioned Tom we've had on the podcast. It was a great episode. I think he dug into some beginner fly fishing tips, and obviously he's got a ton of good resources. Talk about that quick. I'm curious how you met Tom. Have you known him a long time, or how'd that come to be?
Yeah, it was a discussion about using, and I was dealing with Phil Monahan, who runs the Orvis Fly Fishing blog. And I think that's, you know, initial contact at Orvis, and you know, what we could do to incorporate our fly tying videos into the fly fishing blog on a specific day, you know, for it to go up on a specific day. And then I think the first contact with Tom really was Phil mentioned doing his rabbit's foot emerger, and this is probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And then, you know, started talking with Tom and you know, asking questions about that, and then seeing each other at the fly fishing shows. And then I did a bunch of podcasts with him. And then, you know, just kind of evolved from there, you know, sort of an organic, friendship and, healthy, friendly sort of sometimes competition between us. Yeah. That was part of the, you know, part of the, one of the good things about the pandemic, I guess, was having the time and having kind of the audience, you know, more people with more free time to start doing these monthly tying competitions. And I really like doing it. And we've had a great audience participation, a lot of good questions during them, a lot of good heckling. And so
describe that a little bit for, so this is a tying, so this is on like on YouTube, or how do you guys do this? How would somebody connect with this tying? Is it a challenge or just competition?
Yeah, it's a friendly competition, and we alternate months who chooses the fly to tie. And then it's generally at 3 o'clock, the first Monday of the month. And so kind of mid-afternoon, it seems a little weird now, but it worked out really well when most people were at home. But we still, I mean, even with most people back to work, we have a pretty good audience somehow. I guess sure. A lot of people.
Just like you said, the phones, people are watching a lot of this on the phone at work and everything, right?
And so, we just go back and forth. The interesting thing is, and he hates hearing this because I guess it makes him sound old, but I really learned to tie from Tom Rosenbauer a lot.
Oh, wow.
He did these. I mean, he must have been in his 20s when he was doing them. These little three-ring binder books for Orvis that were just at the time, just good pictures, good recipes, techniques built in on some of them. And I learned, I still have the books. I have got a ton of them. So it's really interesting for me to tie, you know, kind of head to head with him. But what's amazing is, even though I've sort of learned from him, is how differently we tie the same fly, and end up with pretty much the same result. And so it really tells you that it doesn't have to be a certain way, that there's like no proper way to tie a fly, and that they're weird little tricks, you know, that you can do to arrive to the same point.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. It's interesting. I love that story. You know, you met Tom, you know, not too long ago, but you've known about him, and he's taught you way before you first met him, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And really all his books have helped out just a ton. And of course, you know, seeing him on video, and he's doing more and more, it seems, tips and techniques, not just tying, but the fishing part as well.
So, yeah, everything.
Yeah. He himself is just a huge resource in terms of fly fishing.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's been, I mean, you think about the resources out there, it feels like, and we had Phil Monahan talked about that when he was on recently, and yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they're doing a daily fly fishing blog, right? There's probably others doing it now, but they started doing that a while back.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got, I think, God, what is it, like 16,000 blog posts or something crazy like that? You know, I mean, the content is unbelievable.
It is, yeah, and good stuff too, you know, covering the range from artists to tying to different techniques to conservation issues. The fly fishing blog is a great thing.
What is the, you know, and as we have some brands definitely that listen to this, and you know, I'm curious from the YouTube's perspective, would you give maybe a tip on that end? Like if somebody's trying to, you know, they're struggling with their YouTube, right? They got a real, you know, the quality isn't good. What would be is there a general tip or some things to be thinking about that might help that person?
This is not going to sound good, but if you're producing videos, tying videos, produce them for the audience, not for yourself. And again, that sounded horrible coming out, but I see people doing that, and they're doing it to promote themselves as opposed to teach people. And I believe that that's not why people go on YouTube, particularly for fly tying. It's to learn. It's not to, you know, help hype somebody else. And it's just more valuable to people. And you can do some of that. You can kind of hype yourself as a tier. But for instance, somebody who goes on and is tying a fly and tells you that they're using a material you're never going to find, that just doesn't seem fair to me.
And so
why are you showing me this if I'm never going to be able to get that material?
Right.
Just kind of a pet peeve of mine. And I watch people would be shocked.
Oh, you do? You watch a lot of videos?
Oh yeah. I watch a ton. And from, you know, the guy in mom's basement You know, tying with the washing machine going in the background.
And, why do you do that? What, Tim, why watch all the random videos, tying videos?
Because there is, I'm telling you, there is always something. And again, I come back to techniques or materials. There's always something, even if they're doing something wrong, it gives me an idea of how to, a different way to do it right. I want to see other people tying. And it's why I like doing tying classes. You watch people that are maybe struggling with something, but it gives me another idea. One, maybe how to, something I can do to help them to do it better, or, you know, changes the way I look at it and go, wow, I never thought of doing it that way. That's not quite going to work, but it might work somewhere else. And so watching other people tie is extremely valuable.
Right. Yeah. That's another good thought there. So, and what about, so these tying classes, are these all at a local fly shop, or is this something you're doing online?
Well, here's the thing. I do them when I can at the local fly shop. And, you know, there, it's Shannon's Fly Shop here in Califon, New Jersey. I guide through them, and they actually, the tying classes are free of charge and amazing. We got Catskill tires that come down.
Wow.
A lot of local New Jersey guy and Pennsylvania guys, Matt Grobert, Alan Landier, John Collins, just all, and I'm sure I'm Bart Lombardo, Lou DeGenna, and, you know, name fly tires all give classes there. It's really kind of incredible. But one of the things that came with the pandemic is doing fly tying through Zoom. And what I've figured out is, you know, nothing's quite like being in front of people and being able to walk around the room and look at flies, maybe help them out with different things, make corrections. But with the Zoom anyway, I can show them, because I have a multi-camera setup here and I have a video switcher, I can show them better what I'm doing than I can in person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I can, even if I bring a television monitor to one of my classes and, you know, have that set up with the camera between me and the fly, that's kind of the one view that I can do when I'm in that situation. Here, when I'm in my studio, I can have a camera that points to me so I can talk to the camera, talk to people, answer questions. I have another one between me and the fly that shows me tying. I can zoom in and zoom out with that to say, you know, maybe show putting dubbing on. Plus I have another camera that I can show materials prep for and just switch live back and forth on the video switcher between the three cameras. And if I need to have a video source that plays off my iPhone, and so if I wanted to show what the real nymph looks like underwater and I have footage of it, I'll go to that. And so I just have so many more things at my fingertips. And obviously it also allows me to reach much further, you know, in person. I, you know, traveling is always an issue. And with this, I can, in this past year, I've done them when I've actually done three separate tying Zooms in an afternoon, kind of working my way from east to west. And, you know, 2 hours at a time, end up in California doing a fly tying presentation. So,
and these are Zooms. Are these like live events, or is this recorded?
They're live, but at the time, you know, to whether it's a club or a Trout Unlimited chapter, and so it's really to their group, which makes sense.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm paid by them for these presentations, and
I see.
Just like doing a normal presentation that I'd drive to or whatever. But then they record them most of the time, and we'll password protect them so they're available to the members, you know, of that club or whatever.
That's a cool thing to do. I mean, I think, yeah, that's great.
They have it as a resource on their, you know, website that they can get to. So, it's been an interesting, you know, one of those things. Didn't really see that one coming either. And fortunately, we were able to get the video gear to help to do that. And
how do you, I'm curious, you know, just on who you choose, I'd imagine that, you know, you get a lot of people reaching out to you to do things. Is that something you find you struggle to do everything you want to do, or is that pretty easy to you know, and especially with days with COVID, you know, with the COVID kind of hopefully lessening, but is that a challenge for you?
It is a challenge. There are some things that I'd really like to do, but I need to be careful of my calendar. And we've kind of in the past year learned that the hard way. And I have to, you know, limit the, to me and to my wife, who Joan, who does a lot of the scheduling, you know, it's easy to look at the calendar and you go, oh, you know, you got this, 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 and this. And, but if those things, you know, land on a day where weather conditions are good and I have somebody that I could guide, you know, I don't want to take away from that. And
oh,
so
right. It's
kind of this constant battle because it's so easy to fill up the calendar with stuff. There's so many different things. And so I have to be careful and limit it. And sometimes it just stinks. You know, I really would like to do, you know, a podcast or a Zoom with this group, but I do need to keep that time open. And one of the big things is for me as a videographer is to just get out and produce content. And I need the time to do that. That content goes into my presentations that I do online and at fly fishing shows. And if I'm so booked that I can't get out there and do it, I don't have that content.
That's the benefit of probably, yeah, the guiding thing too, not only the monetary piece, but just being active and continuing to teach, right? Are you a teacher? I mean, obviously you're a teacher, but have you always thought of yourself as a teacher?
No, but the first job that I have for an educational publisher was, it was for, you know, school classrooms and mostly science-based, but we were doing video-based programs back well before anybody else did them. And what I've always kind of taken away from that is how valuable classroom time is to teachers, like every minute. And you just don't want to waste it. And so I think that's reflected in my video and kind of in the way I teach is that I want it as concise as possible. I don't want to waste people's time. But I guess the teaching is a result of those years of working in that industry and kind of realizing that you need to be rocket clear and that there are many things that can be that are sort of ambiguous, and you don't want to get people tripped up. So need to be clear and concise.
There you go. All right, Tim. And one random one before we get out of here, I'm just curious. So you're a tying expert. You know, you're a fishing. You're a guide. I'm curious. What are you an expert in other than that's totally random? Anything else that's not has anything to do with fly fishing or tying that you would consider yourself kind of an expert, or that maybe that you have a passion in?
Well, it's funny you should ask that. I'll try to keep it short, but over the years I get very, very into things. And a lot of people will have no idea about this, but until very recently, avid surfer since I was, early teens, and have had the opportunity to surf, you know, quite a few different spots, certainly around the country, a few around the world. And, but the surfing led to competitive windsurfing for a number of years, and then, blue water marlin tuna fishing for a number of years and, you know, fishing the tournaments up and down the East Coast. And I'm also, not so much anymore because of my schedule, but an avid bow hunter. And was real into shooting sports, trap and sporting clays for many years. And so, yeah, kind of all over the place and always probably to excess.
Yeah.
But
you go, it sounds like you go all in on it. Everything you do is like the production quality of your videos, right?
Yeah. I really have a hard time kind of going halfway on things. So, but yeah, now we're, fly tying and fly fishing are real big, but within that, you know, there are these little subsets like trout spay and tube flies. And so going down those rabbit holes, but, it's all good.
It is. No, and I obviously these are always the tough ones. You know, I get a guest like yourself on and we could chat for a long time. Like spay would be fun to dig into. So maybe if we get you on again, we'll dig into some spay and all that, because that's a whole other, kind of issue or, you know, questions and things. But nice, Tim. Well, I will let you get out of here. Let's see, I guess tightlinevideo.com. Is that the best place to send everybody?
Yep. Yeah. Send questions. The other thing people can do if they like, it's real easy, is any video that I have on YouTube, just go into the comments field and say, heard you on Wet Fly Swing.
Oh, cool.
And got a question for you. I answer as many as I can. At least I look at them. It's, you know, it's in the dozens every day, you know, across all the videos. But, you know, I try to get back to people when I can.
Oh, good. There you go. So that's going to be the call to action to everybody. This we mentioned at the start. So if you're not over it yet, we're going to go to your channel, Tightline video, and we're going to look if you're at 100K. And if not, everybody's going to subscribe and then comment and note Wet Fly Swing. So we'll see if we can put you over the top here.
Super. And as they say, smash that like button too.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Nice. All right, Tim. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I just wanted to thank you for coming on and spending the time here. And I mean, everything you've done, obviously, it's a humongous resource, and it's been fun watching your videos. And I'm excited to always, you know, link out to you again and keep the word going. So thanks for taking the time today.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave, for having me. That was a lot of fun.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all links and everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/279279. That is 279. Please subscribe if you get a chance. Click that subscribe button or that plus button in Apple, upper right corner. Just click that and follow the show or subscribe wherever you're at. And you will get updated when our next episode drops. And I am sure it's going to be a good one. I am out of here. I am late into the night, so I want to thank you for hanging out with me tonight. This is one of those, one of those times when the eyes are starting to close, and I think it's time to call it quits. So I appreciate you for hanging out all night here late into the night, and I am looking forward to hitting play on that next episode. Looking forward to seeing you online or on the river.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.